This is Art Moves. Art Moves is a series of curated conversations at the intersection of art, innovation, and social justice. Each week, we'll be talking with the innovative thinkers and doers who are forging new ground in the creative arts while redefining what it means to be creative. I'm Tony Williams.
And I'm Eli Kislansky, and we're here with our co-host, Dr. Darrell Cooper.
I'm really excited because guess what? We have a guest host with us today, Dr. Darrell Cooper. How are you, Dr. Cooper?
I am doing well. Thank you so much, Tony and Eli, for having me here today.
And, you know, I'm real excited because we have James Sheldon. Now, James Sheldon was the first white playwright that was produced at the Billie Holiday Theater. And we got some really exciting news about the Billie Holiday Theater. You know, President Biden awards Brooklyn's Billie Holiday Theater the National Medal of the Arts. So, James, now how does it feel? Because your play was produced a few years ago.
Yes,
now look at what is in your background.
Well, we always knew it was going to, the production and the theater were going to rise to greater heights.
Now, what makes you say that? I want to know what made you say that we were
the reaction to the production. Really, I mean, this takes us back to just before the pandemic. It opened in October, November of 2019.
Isn't that true? Right, and it seems like a long time ago, but it really, well, you know, the pandemic, you know.
Yeah, everything right. was compressed, but right. But in those innocent days, you mm-hmm. know, the reaction to the play and the excitement on the part of the Billy and the people working there. Made me think, yes, this is exactly what's going to be, this is going to take us farther.
So give us a little synopsis for our listeners.
Yes. Okay. So the play is called Reparations, and we'll mm-hmm. get onto the title a bit later. But, the play opens with a young black novelist and an older white book editor, recently widowed. She takes him back. They're coming into her apartment. They've been at a book launch and they have something going between them. You're not sure what.
A little energy, a little connection.
A little
huh?
sexual energy, but it's awkward. She's white, he's black, she's 50s, he's 30s. She's an editor, he's a writer. Needless to say, they wind up in bed. And the next morning, things seem very...
Like they were strangers. That's what it seemed like.
Well, they're strangers getting to know each other. And they realize they have a lot in common and a lot of respect for each other. There are also some issues that come up regarding their race and their background. But to make a long story short, some secrets come about, shared secrets about injustices of their past, individual pasts. And as we get into Act Two, a luncheon that had been prearranged with a famous book publisher and his, who's English, white English, and his wife, who's a Nigerian born English doctor. They come and the four of them, revisit some of the dark secrets in each of their pasts. So that's sort of the setup without giving too much away about the suspense.
So Darrell, I'm going to move to you now.
So James, I want to get into the title of the play a little bit. So Reparations, we know that has a very loaded meaning, especially here in the United States. But before we sort of dig deep into the title and understand really what reparations means to you and how that it's being used in the play, I just wanted to throw out some facts here. I wouldn't be a doctor without bringing some facts to this conversation. So the Compensated Emancipation Act, signed into law by Lincoln in 1862, was actually a form of reparations. Although it did not go to those who were formerly enslaved, it was actually $300 paid to owners per free person, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what does that equate to? Well, at the time, Lincoln had allocated $1 million for this act. That would be approximately about $36 million today.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the total federal budget at that time, compared to the budget today, it would equal to about $12 billion in a 2023 format. So, like, sort of thinking about that and, you know, the fact that some people have received reparations, what does the title reparations mean to you in this particular context?
Yeah, I was aware when I dared to use the title. of its general meaning. And it goes beyond slavery in America. There are reparations paid for apartheid in South Africa for any number of atrocities the Germans committed in World War I and World War II. To me, I didn't want to enter into a debate about how, why, when, how much. To me, I wanted to write as a dramatist, I wanted to write about characters whose own personal injustices lead them to seek reparations for those injustices, not from the U.S. government, not from a particular segment of society, but internally. They, you know, like many oppressed peoples, the individuals, and at least in my play, you know, have suffered from deep abuse in earlier years of their life. As they begin to realize that the commonality of those abuses, they're thrown into they're forced to look at each other in different ways, because they realize, you know, one black American, one black African, one Englishman, one American, white American, they realize that they're going to have to be working very much in common.
In the play, there's a segment there where Jeannie says to, who was the book editor, the white book editor?
Jeannie, yes.
Jeannie, yeah.
She says to Reginald, who is the black author, that it's not reparation, that it's revenge.
She
Do you think that's accurate?
What he says is, I'm going to get, I don't need you, Jeannie, but I'm going to use you to get exactly what I want. She says, revenge. He says, that's it's too late for that. What I want
is reparations.
Is reparations.
So what's the distinction in that, in your?
Oh, they're totally different. Totally different. Reparations is not a form of, I don't think of it as a form of inflicting damage on your enemy, however justified it may be. No, that's revenge. Mm-hmm. But reparations, you know, where does this word come from? Reparative, you know, there are lots of synonyms for it, but revenge is not one of them.
No, I definitely hear you. Now, I wanted to talk about, was it intentional that you made these characters of color? Because I think we had a conversation where you were like, well, you know, there was some thought. What was the thought around that?
Really, the play, the way the play developed in the early stages, mm-hmm. It wasn't until I made Reg, thought of Reg as a black writer rather than a white writer, mm-hmm. that the play started to unfold, mm-hmm. for me. And what I wanted to do, in the it's just the two of them, Reg and Ginny, in the first act. The other pair comes in the second act. And what I wanted to also do with them was create a kind of balance by race, by culture, by class, by age and generation. Because I think all of those, the more you can mix up all of those intersections, mm-hmm. the more possibilities there are, I think, for interesting interactions.
So one thing that comes up as a trend throughout the piece is this idea of trauma or past abuse. And when you talk about the repair aspect of reparations, a lot of this is repairing ourselves internally. Could you talk a little bit more about, you know, how you use abuse as a motif throughout this piece?
Well, I don't want to give away the secrets,
right.
but there are, you know, there are forms of abuse that regardless of your race, class, or generation, you may confront, particularly as a younger man or woman. And then there are those who are, unwitting witnesses to that abuse. They're not involved in it, and maybe they don't know about it, but they should know about it.
Right.
So there's a lot of strands.
Well, there was denial in there too.
Denial,
right?
Mm-hmm. the pain. I mean, mm-hmm. these are, you know, we're talking here now psychological terms, and mm-hmm. that to me is what the play really delves into.
What do you say to people who might say that you're just marketing the trauma of, you know, black people, especially thinking about the racial injustices that we've had here in the country? You know, what do you say to those people who might say maybe we're just using black trauma really as a springboard into talking about universal issues?
Well, the white characters in the play also have experienced trauma. And in one case, at least, exactly the same kind of trauma as the two black characters. Look, Reg comes in thinking that he's being singled out for abuse because he's black.
Right.
I hope by the end, he comes to a point where that is no longer the primary thought in his mind. The thought is, I was abused. He was abused. She was abused. And all the people who came, whom he knew, maybe he did know, in his youth, might have also been abused. So it wasn't because he was black that he comes to the realization. And it wasn't because he was black that he was abused.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM.
We're talking to the playwright James Sheldon. Now, I had a question about the, there's a realization at some point, Reg, who realizes that at some point that one of the other characters shared a similar trauma in their life, right? Of course, he says that to Alistair.
Mm-hmm.
And the question for me is like, and we've gone back and forth, you and I, about this, about how did he know, right? So Tony submits that it's energy.
Yeah, that we know each other because we can feel. And the feeling comes from it's subconscious. It's a vibe. It's a feel.
But yeah. I sense to admit it's that plus also body language or blah, blah, blah. So there's two questions. One question is, how did he know? And also, how did you know that they have the ability to read that? Like somebody who suffered trauma, how do they have the ability to read trauma in someone else?
Well, I mean, part of it was knowing trauma victims and studying the issue and finding that there was a, recurring theme that they keep running into each other. They're drawn to each other.
Right,
somehow.
Energy. And what is the body keeps the score, but continue, please.
Well,
sorry.
Reg says it's like alcoholics or drug addicts.
Exactly.
We're drawn to each other.
Right. Interesting.
That's not justification. I mean, that's not dramaturgical justification. It has to be credible. But the facts are that yes, there is a vibe, mm-hmm. and also the fact is that there are a lot of people who have suffered from various forms of psychological and physical abuse.
Many more than we think.
I
would say my challenge was I was just triggered everywhere. I found that. I, in particular, don't like to see black males vulnerable because it is dangerous, So in that sense, that was one of the struggles that I had. And then one of my black male friends said to me the day we were watching the play, but listen, Tony, look at how much you're talking about it. This is what good art does. It provokes a conversation. So it was good art.
Yeah, to that extent. But I have to say, I was when I'd go to the Billy to see it, after it opened, and come out and talk to people from the audience. I mean, I had tears in my eyes because people were coming up to me, hugging me, crying, and saying, thank you for telling my story. This was a black woman, and it happened again with a black man. And I just thought, yes, that's also good art, because whatever I've written, something in it has sparked a recognition in audience members. To me, that was very gratifying. Even more gratifying, or as gratifying, was the next two summers later, there was a revival of the play north of Boston in Gloucester, Massachusetts, Gloucester Stage Company. Gloucester, Massachusetts is probably the whitest.
It's beautiful. I'm from Massachusetts. Yes, it's gorgeous.
One of the whitest zip codes in the country. And sure enough, I mean, there were several, there were a lot of black people coming to see the show, but most of the audience was white. And in the talk back at one point, I was afraid that, maybe the play isn't going to resonate so much with these more uptight Yankee waspy people. But I was wrong. They were just as tearful and just as moved as the audiences that I encountered at the Billy.
So I want to follow up on something that you said, Tony, that which, I couldn't agree more with, just thinking about good art should be able to provoke thought. But there's a slightly other sort of nuance, sort of like saying behind it as well, that specifically when we're talking about theater, and that's, good theater should disturb the comfortable and comfort the disturbed.
Well, right? I was disturbed, so I was comfortable, I imagine.
That's a great saying.
Yeah.
And so with that, in what ways do you feel this piece, especially because we're talking about trauma, we're talking about you know, so many different issues where, you know, people are trying to heal. And really what we see as Reg, not to give too much away, but Reg's attempt at healing, you know, hurt people. And so that's what we see here in the play. But in what ways, you know, did you think through your piece about how you're comforting the disturbed, particularly those who might have experienced some of the things that the characters experienced in the play?
Well, my experience both in Brooklyn and up in Gloucester was that people were moved to embrace their disturbance, to confront their disturbance. And, you know, people, I had a lady come up to me in tears, saying not that she had been abused, but that she had been married to someone who'd been abused. And so she identified with this wife, Jenny, the book editor, in trying to cope with her own denial over the years. So to me, that's, I think that answers, you know, what I'm hoping to put forward here.
What was the the research you did in terms of trauma? I'd love to hear about that. And
I'm trying to be informative without giving it all away.
There was a lot of
writing at the time, a lot of current events about certain kind of sexual abuse, certain segment of the population, not the Catholic Church in this case. So there was a lot available. I did talk to psychologists who deal with trauma patients. I used my imagination as much as anything else, hopefully in an authentic way to express from different lenses what the experience of the trauma was so much as the weight of how that trauma still lives within each of us.
One of the things I thought was a curious choice was the moment when one of the characters sort of gets a hint of her husband's extracurricular activities, how you describe it. But, you know, and he goes into his office and there's a young white male boy, disheveled. And I was curious that why that was that you chose to have a white boy instead of a black boy.
Because, that's a good question. And the reason is I think a good one. Reg believes that, all right, let's give it away. Reg believes that the late husband of this woman, who it turns out was his teacher in boarding school, Reg believes that he was abused by this man because he was black, and that what this man did, he did only to black students. Ginny, when she comes to the realization that her husband, when she comes to accept Reg's story that her husband had raped him in his senior year at high school, she is triggered to go back to a memory of having years ago,
like
walked into
kid,
her husband's office and seen a half naked, a shirt opened white student on his sofa, so that it was not that he was abusing.
A belief for Reggie. Yeah. By the way, you gave it away. I didn't.
I didn't want to sound. I didn't want the rest of it to sound like gibberish. Okay.
So, well, yeah. I want to do a spoiler. That's why.
You know what really fascinated me was how Jenny pivoted so quickly. You know, all of a sudden she's going to be this heroic woman. She's going to be heroic. She's going to be really authentic. She's going to speak her voice when for so many years she was deep in denial. Why that?
It's also outside. It's also, I want to add to that, it's also, you would imagine it to be atypical of a woman, a wealthy woman, like when a woman in class who would do that.
Right.
In some ways, she's like the heroine.
She became a heroine.
Yes. She does. And it has to happen quickly. I think it often does happen quickly in reality.
It does.
Yeah. Because if the pieces come and fall into place, if you're shocked by some, report that your husband was a whatever,
right?
And it's something very heinous, and you begin to wonder with certain memories whether you had an inkling of it and that you were in denial for all of those years. When confronted with that, once you're able to get over the denial, yes, I think it does happen quickly. It needs to happen believably, and that's the challenge of the script and the direction and the performing. But I think we're all, you know, to me, a good play shows that final sudden moment. I mean, Nora in The Doll's House, she didn't just suddenly decide to walk out. Well, yes, she did. She'd suddenly decide to walk out. But you see from the rest of the play that there's nothing sudden about it.
It's like ontological spot welding in a way.
Ontological spot welding. Yeah.
So thank you for bringing Ibsen into the conversation with Doll's House. I was sort of thinking, one question that I had about like the characters specifically, what was the significance of including Millie being specifically from, you know, Lagos, Nigeria, and sort of that interplay between Millie and Reg that we see once Millie's introduced? Because, you know, there's so much nuance when you start talking about the perspectives of African Americans and Blacks from Africa, right, who live there. And so it's a very different type of relationship. And
yeah, I've always been fascinated by the relations that Black Americans and Black Africans have with each other, because they are very different cultures. I wanted another Black character in the play. To me, to be African was just right. To be a woman was even better. And to be a very accomplished child surgeon doctor just seemed to set up a character who looked like she had conquered all the hardships that anyone can imagine, and in many ways she had. But you learn through the course of that act that she's holding on to some deep secrets as well. But yeah, it was to explore the Black on Black relationship. But it was really, I wanted four very different people from four very different backgrounds. And that was sort of how I ended up with making her a Nigerian.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM. And we're talking to James Sheldon about his play Reparations. And this is such an engaging conversation and a deep one, I must say. Because a friend of mine said to me that Americans, especially in our culture, we pay more attention to women who are being sexually abused than men. What do you think about that? Because he was like, there's a lot of sexual abuse happening with young men and teenagers, and it just kind of goes unnoticed.
It certainly had gone unnoticed in the context of American prep schools for a long time, until, 10 years ago, pretty much. It's interesting. The Me Too movement kind of left a lot of the guys out of the picture.
Exactly.
And, one of the characters is one of the female characters was abused by a man. And that seems to be the most common form of abuse that does get, the attention. But, I think there are, male on male abuse stories well beyond the Catholic Church and well beyond the boarding schools. But you're right. Perhaps it's not getting as much attention.
One thing I liked about the play was the breadcrumbs, and in particular, the one, without giving away more of it than you did, was that when Reg comes into the apartment, he picks up the photograph of the boat, right, and the husband in the boat.
Yeah.
And I thought first when I saw I read that, I thought that was really curious because of all the photographs, why would he pick that one up? And of course, later on, you find out about it. So do you think there's other breadcrumbs like that? Did you play some?
Oh, I hope so. I mean, that's that's what makes something really sing. There were breadcrumbs where he sees the picture of the dog and he happens to know the name of the dog, where he says, she says, that's our dog, my husband's dog, Orpheus. He said, Black Orpheus. It's a black dog, Labrador.
So that's the first clue for her, right?
Well,
there's something more to this.
Looking
back,
it would be. Yes, looking back, it would be. And there are more breadcrumbs or little seedlings that are planted along the way.
Yeah, I love that.
Hopefully, come back in the end. And
so, kind of thinking about reparations, and again, we have this sort of motif of trauma. I guess the question would be, who gets to tell what stories?
Who gets to tell what stories? Yeah, that's always the tug of war in history. For a dramatist, as opposed to a historian, one wants to tell stories that can be shared. Obviously, I'm telling a story as a white playwright, so there's going to be that slant to it. But if it's a story that can speak to white, black men, women, and others who have, who can feel either challenged or overcome or soothed by the end of the play, then that's, you know, then I think that's how you bridge those kind of gaps.
So the play was written with a hope of healing. Is that what you were aiming to do?
Yeah, I mean, what is reparation? It's healing. Yeah. But you see, what it is?
Right.
Healing where both parties take mm-hmm. responsibility mm-hmm. for the mm-hmm. healing of the victim.
Can I just jump in on that?
Sure.
Because that second part of it is huge. The
right.
responsibility and the accountability aspect. So I just want to throw this one out here too. So the Civil Liberties Act of 1988, signed mm-hmm. by Reagan, offered $20,000 to each Japanese American that was interned during World War II. Approximately 82,000 people actually received payments as a result of this act up until about 1993. But it wasn't just that, right? And the reparations of that piece, which they did actually call them reparations, right? You know what else they received?
What else?
A formal apology from
wow.
the president.
Apology.
So that second piece is huge. It does take both. So thank you so much, James, for mentioning that.
Yeah, no, it does take both. And the apologies are not yet available to the characters in the play.
Let's
by
go.
The end of it. They got to go find them.
They still have to find them themselves.
Yeah.
But the fact that you wrote and produced the play is also a form of, you know, helping marginalized groups. Would you say?
Yes, but also helping the white groups in Gloucester who seem to be moved by the play as well. Mm. Obviously, I have a sensitivity and an awareness of social justice, or I wouldn't have entitled the play Reparations and had two black characters. But I hope that the social justice that the script provides can be accepted by white people as well.
Yeah, what were the messages? You know, if you could talk about the key messages that you, because you're telling us that you're talking about the social justice piece. And I did see that part in the play, I must tell you. Beyond being triggered.
All those things that mm-hmm. that can come under the general meaning of mm-hmm. reparations.
Mm-hmm.
Apology, healing, closer integration, not to misuse the word.
No,
closer,
I get you.
Closer
mm-hmm.
connection mm-hmm. between the people mm-hmm. involved. I mean, to me, the last moments of the play where Reg is really in tears over reliving both the trauma, but also the sadness and the nostalgia of that innocence that was lost. To me, him looking out and Jenny says, you know, maybe the boy you lost can come back. Maybe he can come back. And he looks out and says, maybe he can. To me, that's how the lesson ends.
It really helps to talk to a playwright, right? Because, you know,
absolutely.
This is excellent. I'm learning a lot. But this was wonderful. Thank you so much, Jane. Thank you, Dr. Darrell Cooper, for co-hosting with us today.
Art Moves is co-produced with Brick Arts Media and recorded at Brick Studio. This has been Art Moves with your host, Tony Williams.
And Eli Kaslansky and our distinguished co-host, Dr. Darrell Cooper.
Find some art that moves you and share it with someone.